Hello, everybody. This is Dr. Diana Wiley, your host of Love, Lust, and Laughter. I am so pleased because my guest is Dr. Mark Schoen. He's a filmmaker who made the documentary Betty Dotson, Her Life of Sex and Art. And we're going to be talking about Betty in this program. Welcome back, Mark Schoen. I'm so glad you're back on this show. You're my friend and colleague. Good. And so you made this, you not only were a friend of Betty's for a long time, I want to hear about that, but let's start with the documentary you made about her life of sex and art. And because there may be some listeners in our audience who don't know about Betty Dotson. So, Mark, why don't you tell us how the documentary came to be and some of its features.
Okay, well, Betty and I were friends since the late 70s, and you know, she was known as the mother of masturbation.
Yes.
And in, I think, 2007 or 8, she did a presentation of her artwork. And most people didn't know she was an artist. And in fact, the film opens up where the interviewer says, Betty, you're here to talk about your art. And I didn't even know you were an artist. And Betty says, yes, most people think I just masturbate.
And that reveals her body, sometimes body sense of humor. I mean, she was really at times outrageous. I love that line too. Yeah. All right. So, and go on about her art and her.
She did this presentation at a professional meeting, and I was there and I watched it. And when she got off the stage, you know, we were saying hello, and I said, Betty, this is a film. And she said, let's do it. So she was doing this presentation again in Seattle, Washington, in a month or two. And I came out and I brought a crew and we shot the whole presentation and then got all the slides of the artwork so we could show close-ups of the slides. And, you know, her art evolved as her life evolved. You know, she starts out, you know, she came from Wichita, Kansas. And she came to study art. And one of her first jobs was doing these pen and ink drawings of underwear for newspapers. And she said, in fact, she says, I made a living drawing underwear. And she said, and I don't even wear it. So
that's Betty. And on the back cover of the DVD, which I still have because of Betty Dotson, Her Life of Sex and Art, there's a slide showing the girdle with garter belts and stockings that she drew. So
yes.
That's an example of her early work.
Yes, and her artwork evolved as her life evolved, and you know, it went from underwear to drawing nudes to actual drawing sexual behavior. And so she was one of a kind. She was a pioneer. She was very sex positive, and she really made a contribution to the sexuality field.
She really did. And Eli Coleman, who heads up the sexuality program at the University of Minnesota, said that she uniquely promoted pleasure as the main drivers of sexual arousal and personal well-being. And this will be her long-lasting legacy, promoting pleasure.
That was
so many people don't promote pleasure. I mean, we do through our work, but a lot of sex education, if it exists at all, doesn't promote enough pleasure. But we'll probably come back to that. But I do want to focus mainly on Betty. You are allowing people to see her, the documentary you made of her, on your website, sexsmartfilms.com. And listeners, this is a wonderful, wonderful website. And so you're making it available for people to watch, and you can go there. I watched it again from the website, and I haven't seen it for a while. It was wonderful to see it. Sexsmartfilms.com. I'll put it in my show notes.
I feel like it's a tribute to her because there are so many people who didn't know who she was, and she was so sex positive, so, as you said, promoted pleasure, and she really was a high quality sexual educator. She gave people information to make them feel comfortable about their sexuality and about their pleasure. So I've made this film on my homepage of sexsmartfilms.com free. So please watch it. I also have 5 more interviews with Betty that are on the website as well. So one of my favorite ones.
Tell us about the one of your favorite ones that has to do with the Oster vibrator.
Well, when I was a kid and I would go for a haircut, the barber would take this, and I didn't know it was an Oster vibrator, put it on his hand and rub the back of my neck. And Betty had told me the story about the first vibrator she ever used was an Oster.
Mm-hmm.
So in my travels, I ran across one of these old vintage Oster vibrators, and I purchased it, and I gave it to Betty as a gift. And one of the interviews we did with her, she was holding the vibrator and told the story of how she learned about it. And basically, her lover at the time, and he was her lover for 40-some-odd years, it was a Sunday afternoon, and he wanted to watch football, and she wanted to have sex. So he had this Oster vibrator, and he said, "Let me show you something." And he started rubbing her back, and then her breasts, and then eventually he got to her clitoris. And Betty said that, you know, for her to have an orgasm takes 20 to 30 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
mm-hmm.
he put the Oster vibrator on her, and bingo. And mm-hmm. she went, "Oh, my God." And she came to this realization that this was worth something. But she said, "I don't want to have a relationship with a machine. I'm not going to fall in love with a machine." And anyway, she processed all this, and eventually, you know, came to grips with the vibrator and just loved it. And I suggest if you have an opportunity, watch this. She really tells it better than I do.
Yeah, that's another piece of her legacy that's just so interesting. So she used famously in her body sex groups, which go back, I think she must have started them about 30 years ago.
Oh,
you know her?
I think more than 30 years ago.
Yeah, more than.
Because
maybe it was maybe it was closer to 1978 when she did her first.
Yes, because I have a copy of her book, Liberating Masturbation,
that
came out in the eighth printing came out in 1980.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an amazing little book.
Yes.
And her artwork I mean, she has close-ups, pages of close-ups of different female genitals. And she, you know, there were some women in her groups who were self-conscious about their labia. And she normalized it. You know, she said it doesn't matter if it's long or short or thick or thin. She showed images of female genitals and let them, basically she said they're all normal. They're different. And
they're different. And she also pointed out the aesthetics of a vulva and labia. And she, in some of her drawings look like flowers because that's of the vulvas and the labia and the clitorises. Yes. So she, I mean, it's quite, it's quite artistic. And, you know, I think that her body sex workshops were so useful in teaching women how to overcome negative body image and also pleasure anxiety.
Absolutely. And by the way, her first body sex workshop was in 1973.
Oh, thank you for looking that up. Okay.
Yes, it was in
1973. A long time, and,
Yeah, and so many women who I've talked to since I've made this documentary available have told me that they attended one of these body sex workshops and told how helpful it was for them, what it, how it impacted their life and their sexual, their sexuality. So, you know, Betty really touched many lives.
Yeah, she did. And I think that thanks to Betty Dodson, millions of women have known orgasmic bliss. And that is, what a legacy, just that. That women have learned how to have orgasms because of Betty Dodson and be more comfortable with their bodies and their genitals. That's huge, because that's such a huge problem for women.
And it was interesting to hear women say, you know, when she ran these workshops, women would take mirrors and look closely at their genitals. And it was amazing to hear some of these women say, I've never looked before.
Yes, yes.
And so, you know, and if you do a comparison of male and female genitals, males are constantly looking at their genitals. You know, we have no choice. You know, they're there. So,
and they're there. They're on the outside. You know if you're getting an erection or not.
Yeah. And so she helped these women who were uncomfortable look at their genitals and help them feel good about their genitals. Some of them, you know, thought there was something wrong with them.
So. That's right. I've had clients like that over the years that I've been doing this work as a sex therapist. Yeah, clients that, females, that women, they're just uncomfortable with how they look. And that was a huge thing she did, was to draw different vulvas. And what a fine artist she is, honestly.
Oh, I mean, the artwork in this documentary is, it's amazing how you see her life progress and you see her art followed a pattern, and it got more explicit, it got more detailed, she talked more about it and used them not only as art but as educational tools. And she made such an impact on people. I mean, I sound like, maybe I sound like a broken record, but if you think about what woman has had such an impact on female sexuality? I mean, I can't name anyone more powerful than Betty.
I agree with that, and her legacy goes well. Now we're talking for 40 plus years, 50, right? Almost 50.
Yes.
And that's something. And what is also interesting about her is that, you know, she had labels of artist, author, educator, and she was really all of those. She was also kind of bawdy and exhibitionistic at times, and people loved her for that, especially people in our field, and I count myself as one of them. I wasn't close to her, but I had several visits to her apartment it was right near the Empire State Building. And
23rd Street.
23rd Street. And you also had visits with her there, and I'll let you tell your story in a minute. So the last time I saw her in person, I have many stories to tell, but probably not as many as you do, Mark. But so she gave me her book, and I don't know if it got retitled, but at the time in 2010, she called it My Sexual Revolution. And she signed it for Diana, a sister sex educator with an overload of T, Betty Dotson, 2010. T is for testosterone. And yeah. And her closest friends were not academics, you wouldn't expect that of her, but were sex workers and filmmakers like the wonderful Mark Schoen that I'm speaking to now, and porn stars and sex toy promoters. All of these people that also fully appreciated what she was doing. She was really so needed for our times. And she, yes, and her workshops for women, her art, her books, her videos. She made a partnership with Carlin Ross, and so the website that Carlin helped her with many years ago now is very good, and I'll put it in the show notes, dotsonandross.com. And you can find out a lot about Betty on that website. So tell us a little more, Mark, about actually making the documentary. You came here to Seattle, and it was happened to be a couple of years before I landed in Seattle. But Elizabeth Ray Larson, the head of the Institute for Sex Therapy Education and Research, and I collaborated with them for years. Well, tell us the story, how Ray Larson and you, tell us the story.
Well, Ray helped coordinate the location where we were going to do it and helped make it happen. It got all the people involved in the conference to be willing to be on camera. And so when we got there, you know, we set everything up, and the moderator of the conference helped open up the film by introducing Betty, and after that, Betty took over, and she, I mean, what you see in the documentary is what we got. You know, she was so articulate and so comfortable in what she was doing, it was easy to shoot. And she provided us with all her artwork. So after we shot Betty and she was talking about the artwork, we went and shot all the artwork. And when she would refer to a little detail in the artwork, we made sure we got a close-up of it. So you can really get a sense of the intricacies of her art and see what she was talking about. And it was actually, you know, I've done a lot of films, but this one was fun. It was fun to do.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And we got a lot of recognition for it. You know, the ASEC, the art professional organization, gave us the Film of the Year award in, I think it was 2009, and we went into some other film festivals and got some best documentary awards. And people are still watching. You know, this was 2008 when we shot it.
Yeah.
And it's 2020, and people, you know, no one watches it and say, oh, that's an old film. It's held its own.
Of course it has. Of course it has. And Betty held her own. She died at 91 on Halloween. And just this last Halloween. And she was feisty pretty much till the end, so I understand. She had
I'm sorry, say again? No, I didn't see her close to the end. And, you know, we were supposed to get together about 6 months ago, and it didn't happen. And just disappointed. You know, I used to be in New York, so we would get together a lot. You know, we would sometimes just grab lunch together and talk about things that are going on in the field. And I remember once we met a fellow who produced this vibrator, and he gave her one to try. And I remember him coming up to her at a meeting and saying, do you want to promote my vibrator? And I think this is an exact quote. She said, I wouldn't promote that piece of crap. She didn't like it. But the vibrator she did like.
Yes, yes, tell that story.
was the Hitachi Magic Wand.
Mm-hmm.
And she thought it was the best vibrator on the market, and she used it and promoted it, and she once contacted Hitachi. Now, if you know, Hitachi doesn't, in their promotion of it, calls it a massager and makes no mention of any sexual use for it. And when Betty contacted them, they sort of brushed her off. They didn't want to promote it as a sexual product. So, and to this day, she did that in the late 70s, and some 50 years later, it's still not being promoted for any sexual use, although it is widely used sexually.
Widely used. And, and Betty would have a Hitachi magic wand for each woman in her body sex group. For each woman to use. And all women are naked. They're sitting in a circle. And, what do you know about that? I've talked to a couple of women who've actually done it, been a participant.
There were women who had difficulty having orgasms, and Betty helped them, and there were number of women who had their first orgasms in Betty's workshop.
Yes.
So.
And how exciting is that? It's so exciting for a woman to know, oh, so this is what it feels like. It's, oh, wow, there's no other high like this.
Yeah.
To have an orgasm. Wow.
And when you think about it, we do very little sex education in the United States. You know, parents don't talk to their children. Children don't get any sex education in school for the most part. And they rely on peers and the internet to get their sexual information. And when they do that, they end up on a porn site. And porn is not meant to educate 10 and 11 year olds. And so Betty sort of picked up the slack, but not to very young people. So, you know, we need to do more sexual education. And I'm sure Betty would have agreed with that.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, she was a sex educator extraordinaire, as are you. I mean, just let's take a little departure here and talk about your sexsmartfilms.com promoting sexual literacy. I think your little RX pads, I'm holding one in my hand, are great. Now that I'm seeing clients on Zoom, I can't hand them what I suggest that they view mm-hmm. on the site, but I can tell them. So this is very good, your Sex Smart Films. It's, and you've had that website up since about 2008, maybe?
Yes, 2008.
Yeah, yeah. And so tell us about, just give us an overview of, besides Betty Dotson, which you're, again, for, let's remind the listeners that they can watch your documentary, which is award-winning already, for free. And there are yes. other things on your site that people can watch for free, and otherwise they need to have a subscription. So just tell us a little bit about that part of it and how many films you have on the website now. Last I checked, it wasn't it in the 500s?
No.
400.
625 films as of today.
625 films. Okay.
Yes. And it goes anywhere from public service announcements from 52 countries about different sexuality. And if you want a cross-cultural perspective on sexuality, check out some of these public service announcements and condom commercials. Some of them will make you laugh, but it's really interesting, you know, that some countries have nudity in their commercials, you know. Here in the United States, we don't show nudity on television. And I was in Denmark
yes.
when I was in graduate school, and I was with a family, and everyone was watching television, and there was lots of nudity, and their five-year-old son was in the room, and no problem. He was watching the nudity, and all of a sudden, a show came on, and a fight broke out. The mother grabbed the five-year-old kid and covered his eyes. She didn't want him to see violence.
Yeah, so, yeah. That's such an enlightened approach. And, of course, the Scandinavian countries head the list, along with the Netherlands, right, in terms of sex
yes.
education.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you see films that I have old films. I have interviews with some of the pioneer sex researchers. I have sex therapy films. I have educational films for young children. I have educational films for adults. You know, one of the films that's very popular is a four-minute film called The True Story of How Babies Are Made.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah.
And it was, we animated a children's book from Denmark, and it shows the mother and father nude, and it says when the father gets especially loving, his penis gets larger, and it shows intercourse, and it shows the baby growing in the mother's womb. And I remember the first time I showed it at a professional meeting. Now, keep in mind, this is a book that's made for five-year-olds in Denmark, five, six-year-olds. And
wait, Mark, also please explain that it is animated. It's not,
yes,
it doesn't show actual people.
Yes. Oh, yes, it's animated.
Yeah.
And someone came up to me and said, do you think this is suitable for high school? So...
It's our Puritan heritage, I guess, in the United States. We're so far behind. I love it. We're Facebook friends, and I notice that when it's somebody's birthday, you often send a clip from that movie, which shows the baby coming out of the mummy. Birthday. Yeah. Happy birthday. It's so cute.
Yeah. And the author of that book, Per Holm Knudsen from Denmark, he's still active, and he and I are in touch. And that book came out in 1973.
Is that right?
Yes. And that was the same year Betty started her body sex workshops. So 1973 was an important year.
Yeah. It's the year I married my first husband, too.
Okay.
And, and the father of my children. So that I do consider 1973 also important. So tell us anything else about your website, and then we'll circle back to Betty.
What's interesting is that there are people who use the website and then will contact me and thank me and say, I remember one person said, I couldn't go and talk to anyone about my sexuality.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, what I liked about your site is no one knew I was looking at it. It was totally anonymous. And I thought, I didn't realize how important that was to many people, that they could do self-sex education, self-sex therapy, and not feel threatened. But one of the interesting things is sex therapists, as you were saying before, prescribe videos for clients. And the video that's prescribed most often, is the first Sensate Focus exercise.
Yes.
Which deals with sexual anatomy and physiology. And I think you've used that one.
Absolutely. It's very good because it's often one of the very first homework assignments I give. And now in my book, Love in the Time of Corona, in the fourth chapter, Use Touch to Relieve Stress, I have some full body caressing exercises. I didn't use the word Sensate Focus in this case just because it was a little clinical, but so many couples do benefit from these Sensate Focus full body caressing exercises. So many benefits, because if a man is experiencing erectile dysfunction or premature ejaculation, or if a couple hasn't had sex in a long time, and I just had a new couple yesterday over Zoom. They're both 40, and they do have children, but they haven't had sex in 2 years.
Wow.
So this is not that unusual, and of course the pandemic for many people has made them even more celibate because they're so stressed and anxious. But, you know, couples like I saw yesterday, they're realizing that their marriage depends on them getting their sex life back on track. If you have that kind of physical intimacy, which enhances the emotional intimacy, but it's kind of a feedback loop, emotional to physical intimacy, right? If they have that, they can, and if they realize that sex is good for their health and their immune system, they're so much better off to have pandemic sex, as I sometimes call it with my husband, because, you know, aware of your mortality, making the most of this time you have in quarantine together, And it's also a great time for couples as a way to get back on track to go to sexsmartfilms.com. And other than the Sensate Focus, the first Sensate Focus exercise, what are some of your other popular videos that people seem to click on a lot?
Well, the Betty Dodson films are, as we've said, very popular. But another one that's very popular is a film I did in 1993.
Yeah.
And it's called Becoming Orgasmic.
Oh, yes, of course. It wasn't that Lo Piccolo, too?
Yes, that was Joseph Lo Piccolo. And Julia Hyman wrote the book. And we made a film. And it's the story of a woman who never had an orgasm. And she's reading the book and following it step by step. And at the end, she has an orgasm. And it's still very popular. In fact, some people will say to me, you know, the clothing in that film is a little outdated. And I say, but the information is not outdated. So,
and that's true for lots of the films on your website. It's just, but it makes it historical, and you're right. The information is not at all outdated.
Yeah, so it's interesting to me how little sex education there is in the United States, and I hate to say it, but this lack of sex education increases the need for sex therapy. And I think if there were more comprehensive sexuality education at an earlier age, there would be less need for sexual therapy at an older age. Do you agree with that?
Absolutely, I agree with that, because I just talked about the new couple that I saw yesterday, and no sex for 2 years. Both 40, so you can kind of get a sense of when they were born and the kind. But they were both raised, one in a Catholic family that was very strict, and the other in an evangelical Christian family, and they got zero sex information. And the husband, to this day, has trouble talking about sex, and that is very, very common.
Yes.
So it can really help to have visuals. And even the sex ed films that I helped narrate for the Sinclair Institute, I recommend those to some of my clients too, because I've had clients that, especially the very raised in very religious households, the women, like, they've never even seen another couple having intercourse. Now, the guys have perhaps seen pornography, but this is not educational, as you already pointed out. This is just entertainment, and it's not good education. So it's really, really important. I so often have to do sex education before I can do sex therapy.
Yes.
You know, I had a couple from India, and, of course, India is now just beginning to have slightly better sex education. But in one case, actually more than one, but in one case, the guy didn't even know what the clitoris was, where it was, and what it was good for. So, and the woman had very little information. So these things are really important.
Yes.
I have one of those vulva puppets that helps, you know.
No,
the vulva puppet.
Yes. But I remember hearing from a sex therapist that a woman, a 60-year-old woman, came to her saying she's never had an orgasm, and she started talking to her, and she had never heard the word clitoris and didn't know she had one. So,
this was an American woman?
Yes, an American woman.
Yeah, all right.
There's
no upper age limit for the first orgasm. Especially if a vibrator is used. When I was at UCLA's Female Sexual Medicine Center, we discovered we, meaning the urologist, discovered more than me, but that those, if a woman had not masturbated as a teenager, maybe up until, you know, her early 20s, no masturbation, it was, she most always was not orgasmic. And the theory is that those nerve pathways that go from the brain to the genitals were not laid down because there was no masturbation. And but these women almost always needed a vibrator. And I also co-led with Maria Flaherty, you remember Maria, women's sexuality groups for 8 years. And all of these women had had sexual trauma, and they weren't able to be present enough to let go. And so, again, though, it often took using a vibrator to get them off, just like with Betty. Well, she was so surprised when the Oster got her off in 2 to 3 minutes instead of 20 to 30, right?
Yes. So. Yes. She was sold after that first experience.
Yes.
And one of the films we made was a woman masturbating with a vibrator. And I remember that was made around 1980. And I remember people talking about being addicted to a vibrator. And Betty addressed that. In fact, in one of the interviews we did, she sort of demystified that myth that you can become addicted to a vibrator. She said, you know, and she also encouraged people to use vibrators while they're with their partners.
So. Yes. Yes. If, and that can be a lot of fun and maybe even produce more dopamine, the hormone of arousal that needs novelty. So if a long-term couple brings a vibrator in to their lovemaking, and usually a smaller one works a little better for this, you know, they can experiment and explore and discover, like the man, the woman can use the vibrator on herself and the man can maybe use his tongue on her or his fingers on her. Sometimes they can actually have PIV sex, penis and vagina, while she uses the vibrator on her clitoris. So there are lots of creative ways that can really heighten a couple's pleasure.
Yeah. It just amazes me how little we know about sexuality and how much information is out there, and it's yours for the taking, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And Betty was, she fought this, and I hope her legacy lives on, and I hope that, you know, we can continue her work. And if you ever get a chance to see her, well, if you watch the documentary, you could see her artwork. And I also recommend her books. She, you know, The Liberating Masturbation is just wonderful.
Yep. And so is Sex for One. I think it's sold millions of copies at this point.
Yes. Yes.
And Sex for One has some of those, has a lot of her beautiful drawings where you can see the variety of vulvas, you know. And the same is, of course, true for male genitals. There's a whole lot of variety. We're not all made the same.
Yeah.
So it's a wonderful way to get educated. And, her artwork, I'm going back to about 1998, and I came from Honolulu, where I was living with my late husband, Charlie, who was not late, of course, at the time. He was very much alive, and I brought him to one of my conferences. I guess it was Quad S. And Betty was there, and in fact, Betty and Stella Resnick and her husband, Alan, and Charlie and I, we all had dinner together. What a fun, laughing dinner. And it certainly exposed my husband, Charlie, to Betty Dotson, who was especially outrageous. Anyway, we had that meeting with her. The whole dinner was just full of laughter, and the waiters kind of were hanging around. They were so interested in what we were talking about. That happens when you get a bunch of sex therapists and educators together, right?
Yes.
So we did buy two of her, actually, I think three of her drawings signed, and I had two of them framed, and they hang above my bed. And I'd kind of forgotten about that. And a few years ago, when one of my grandsons was visiting, he came into my bedroom and saw these drawings above my bed. And he was like seven. And he said, "Glamma, what are these people doing?" And I said, "Well, yeah." And I'd kind of forgotten they were there. But I said, "Well, these are people that really love each other, you know, like your mommy and daddy love each other. And they're expressing their love. And yes, they're naked. And it feels good." And I just left it at that. But that's my little bit of sex education for my grandson. And my daughter, their mother, would approve. She would approve.
And I remember in the early 70s, Betty was at a NOW conference, National Organization for Women.
Yes.
And she did a slideshow of close-ups of female genitals. And let me tell you, that was controversial. And it was the talk of the town. And she also brought vibrators and told people that you could have better orgasms with them. And she brought some and sold them. And I think she sold them all. But when you think about the early 70s, what was going on to show sexually explicit films at a professional meeting, she had a lot of gumption.
Yeah. Well, she did. And but were you at that meeting or did you just hear about it?
No, I just heard about it.
Yeah, I wished I'd been at that meeting. But I think most people in our field found her refreshing. She was just so out there. And apparently Playboy magazine also found her important because Playboy magazine listed her as number 43 of the 100 most important people in sex.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
Yeah. And and she was also named one of the top 10 sexual revolutionaries by Cosmopolitan magazine.
That I believe, yes.
Yes. So, I mentioned Eli Coleman earlier. So in 2020, she was selected as one of the top 50 sexual and gender revolutionaries by the Program in Human Sexuality, University of Minnesota Medical School. So she got a lot of accolades, and she was on all kinds of television shows, national TV shows,
yes.
And quoted in all kinds of national magazines, too. But she was even on the History Channel one time, and The View, and HBO, and Phil Donahue, and Joan Rivers, as I was once. Joan Rivers was really open about sex. So, actually, I was on Joan Rivers twice, once with Howard Stern. That was a story that we'll save for another time. But But, Betty, one of a kind, right? One of a kind.
Yes. Do you remember when she spoke out about the Broadway show, The Vagina Monologues?
I do remember something about that. Refresh my memory and those people who are listening.
Believed it had a sort of a negative and restrictive view of female sexuality, and it had a bias, an anti-male bias, and she was very outspoken about it, and the producer or the writer, I forget what she was, I think her name was Eve Ensler.
She was both the producer and the writer. Mm-hmm.
Okay. She was the producer and the writer. Okay. And they had a verbal battle, and it lasted, I believe it lasted some years.
Mm-hmm. Betty was never shy to speak up, and that was one of the great things about her. That she did,
right.
She did speak out, she actually wrote this in her foreword of the book that I referred to that I got in 2010, My Sexual Revolution. She said, "This is from her foreword. No matter where the sexual pendulum swings." From right to left, enjoying sex for the pleasure of it will endure, including our constant companion, sex with ourselves, end quote.
Cool.
Yeah. We always have sex with ourselves. And
yes.
During this pandemic, I'm sure a lot of people have enjoyed masturbation, and maybe it's the only touch or sexual release that they have. And so it's very, very important. I just read a part of the foreword from her book. In her epilogue, I just want to share this little bit with all of you. She reports an actual little bird's visit one night. She called this a sacred experience, and it taught her patience to wait until the morning when the bird could have daylight to see her way out. And Betty wrote, "The bird was a divine visitor who offered Betty this message. When the time is right, the light will be there to see your way out." And Halloween was Betty's time, and I think the light saw her out. And I think it left some sensual light for those of us who loved and admired her. But isn't that message, when the time is right, the light will be there to see your way out. I love that message.
Yes, I've gotten a chill.
Yeah. Well, I feel so fortunate to have known her and to have benefited from her her work, my clients especially. I just feel so fortunate.
Well, if you look how many people she met and worked with, and all of those people have passed on her message too. So her message has outreached beyond my imagination.
Yeah.
Between her workshops, her books, her films, her writing, it she just had led an amazing life.
And she really did.
And
she's also quite a good writer. She's a body writer. I mean, I was rereading My Sexual Revolution, and my goodness, It's quite explicit. I just happened to open to page 148 here, and she uses the term Bacchanalian revelers. She just really enjoyed good sex, too. And she was an interesting woman. She had sex with women. She had sex with men. And in the early days, that wasn't always accepted, the bisexuality.
Right.
And feminists didn't like that either, that she would go both ways, the early feminists. You know, you had to be one or the other.
Oh, yeah. And she stood her ground, because when she was criticized, she wouldn't back down.
Mm-hmm.
So
she always stood her ground.
Yeah, but she led by example.
She did, absolutely. I'm so glad that you made your documentary available for people to watch free. So,
well, it's my tribute to Betty.
Yes, and it's a wonderful tribute. People need to go, and people should also look around at your website, sexsmartfilms.com, because there's so much there. And there's the music. So thank you, Mark.
Thank you, Diana. Great talking to you.
Good to talk to you, and I think we did a proper and good tribute for Betty Dotson. Betty, we'll always miss you, but what a legacy you left.
Thank you, Betty.
Yes, thank you, Betty. Bye, Mark. Bye, everybody.